was the best, but she got bored with the flying trapeze. There wasn't enough money in it for Claire. Nobody knew her name. And now she jumps from aeroplanes without a parachute.
This is a tight ship now. Welcome to Lost and Found and Rewound, where we finally found a film that perfectly depicts the timeline for season one of this podcast.
It is.
I'm Chris Lost.
I'm Found Jim.
I'm Rick Rewound. It is an apt metaphor.
It's amazing how these things all connect. Maybe just everything is the same.
Like-minded. Everything is like-minded.
Like-minded, exactly. Everyone is like-minded, says a cis white male. Jim, would you like to tell us about the film we just watched and give us a little synopsis?
Spoiler alert.
That's why we do the fast forwards. See, they put those out, people watch the movie, and now they know. Mm.
Yeah, it's all out the window. Who cares? Yeah, it's like it was ruined for me kind of because I watched that interview, the UCLA film archive, you know, thing from a few years ago with the panel with them all talking about it, like, you know, the director and Ellen Barkin and Jodie Foster. And I watched enough of it till it was like, oh, yeah, she's dead. They were kind of joking about it, I think. I don't know. Was Ellen Barkin was like, wait.
I was, you know, dead? Yeah, yeah, she didn't know she was dead.
Yeah, I don't know if she's really, I think she was kind of kidding.
Maybe she never saw the film.
Actually, right. I think the director mixed it. I think the director said something like, he killed you. And she's like, he killed me?
Right.
I think that she accidentally, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I think there was a mistake about who actually killed her, because yeah. Isabella Rossellini kills her.
It's a little scary when the director doesn't know.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
No, it was like Ellen Barkin.
Okay, Ellen Barkin couldn't remember who killed her. Okay.
And Jodie Foster said that she was drunk the whole time. She didn't remember any of it. And I think she had just graduated from college. Does that sound right? Is that how?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She would. That would be
22.
About
yeah. That's about right.
She was saying in this panel, she was like, I don't remember any of this. Wow. So, yeah, what is this movie? I don't know. It's like a.
Should you say the name of the movie?
Yeah, the movie's called Siesta, 1986. 87, I guess it's 86.
86, 87.
86, didn't really.
Yeah. Stellar cast. Ellen Barkin is the star.
87, sorry.
87. Ellen Barkin, Gabriel Byrne, Julian Sands, Isabella Rossellini, Martin Sheen, Alexei Sayle, Grace Jones, and Jodie Foster. Soundtrack by Miles Davis. I guess I can see why it just sort of disappeared. When I first heard about this movie, it was Alexei Sayle talking about it and how, you know, was just like, oh, this terrible movie I was in. And he said, yeah, everyone thought they were making a Fellini film. He just thought it was ridiculous and went off the rails. It's like his name kept getting higher and higher in the credits. You know, it's like, and everyone was just like distancing themselves from this project. But he almost became the star of it. But he's not, he has a little small part. The director is, you know, Mary Lambert. She did all these, she made her name making music videos, and they're all kind of erotic, racy videos, you know, for MTV. I looked at them today. Yeah, a lot of those videos that she made, I hadn't seen, like the Madonna videos. I mean, I knew all those songs, but I don't think I ever really watched.
You never saw Like a Prayer?
Maybe. I guess I saw parts of them, but the earlier ones, like a Virgin and stuff, I saw parts of them, but I never really.
You were listening to Double Nickels on the Dime.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly.
Why would you be watching MTV?
Right. I was watching MTV in my friend Eric's basement. I always associate early MTV with Eric in his basement. He's the only, you know, my friend who had cable. We watched MTV all the time, and I remember some of these. But, well, the one I really liked that she did was Sheila E.
Yeah, the Glamorous Life video, I remember.
And, it's a great video.
I love that song. You know, these other songs, you know, like Madonna. I didn't listen to Madonna, but like you said, I was listening to the Minutemen, but I remember the Sheila song. I was like, oh, this is great. The video, I remember that video. This was her first major motion picture. It was like her trying to make the jump. I think it's better than I expected, but it was a bit lost and hokey and kind of trashy. You know, some of the dialogue is just kind of like crude, you know, which is fine, but kind of dumb.
I liked it. Going in having very low expectations, 14%. Yeah. On Rotten Tomatoes, but 65% from viewers, so that was optimistic. Mm. You do get away with bad dialogue once you realize all the bad dialogue was in the death scenes. We haven't really explained the plot of the film, right? Is a woman is found dead, or she's dead and near an airport, and then...
Well, she's laying there, and she gets up, though. You right. don't know she's dead.
We don't know she's dead.
But she's a stunt woman, and she's going to do this insane... stunt, jumping out of a plane without a parachute.
Into a burning net.
Right.
And if she doesn't hit the net in time, like, it's not hard enough to jump out of a plane and hit a net perfectly. But if you don't hit it soon enough, it will burn away and you'll die anyway. With just the craziest. No human being would ever try a stunt like that.
Well, there's one human being.
Not Evel Knievel.
Maybe. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
He would rig it so that he would... He'd have a parachute on him.
This connects back to our little vacation.
Vacation,
to see, the Evel Knievel Museum.
Yeah.
She was the female Evel Knievel because she was getting rich off of crazy airplane stunts.
Ellen Barkin, the stunt woman, she has an earlier life in Spain, and Gabriel Byrne is her teacher. He's like a circus performer, teaching her the tightrope walking and flying trapeze. But at one point, he says, like, she became... bored of the flying trapeze. That was my favorite line. When he was like, but he said it with such gravitas. It was like,
one of my notes is, I have a note that says Evel Knievel, and then I have another one that says circus people.
Yeah.
This film was written by a woman, Patricia Louisiana Knopp. It was based on a novel by a woman, Patrice Chaplin. It was directed by a woman. The main character was female, but it seemed very male gazey, this film.
It kind of seems like a classic porn, you know, like 70s porn film without the pornography.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, Rick, because Zalman King is one of the producers of this film.
Uh-huh.
He was just coming off of 9.5 weeks.
There we go. Okay,
It was way in his vein.
And the screenwriter, I think she wrote 9.5 weeks.
Oh, did she? Yeah, she wrote a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, they're all kind of erotic. She wrote something else, too, one of those others.
So 9.5 weeks, he had some sort of clout to it, or it was an icon within the 80s, but he quickly devolved into Lake Consequence and Red's Shoe Diaries and all these sort of Cinemax softcore porn movies. I always wondered, like, well, how did he fall off the legit train and just end up in cable softcore for the rest of his career? But it was actually, this film was that transition. So he did... 9.5 weeks, Siesta, and then he's at Lake Consequence, which was, you know, the first of his Cinemax movies that then went into Red Shoe Diaries.
Huh. My assumption would be money. That was a profitable business to be in.
Uh-huh.
The other thing I realized is, thinking about this, Mary Lambert directed the Would I Lie to You video, the Eurythmics video. And one of the characteristics, you know, kind of when videos were starting to expand beyond the form, you know, and then they have the little narrative bits at the beginning of the video. And that I was watching that video last night where Annie Lennox is having a terrible interaction with Stephen Bauer, you know, who is in Scarface and Better Call Saul, married to Melanie Griffith. He's on a motorcycle and he's saying, what does he say? He says, I hope you lose your voice tonight or something. It's really awful stuff. And I realized, oh, this movie kind of feels like those little narrative moments before the music videos. Like when that was kind of like the stepping stone for a lot of video directors, right? It's like, oh, we'll put a little narrative in at the beginning.
Yeah, I watched a bunch of her videos today. And yeah, they all have that little preface, whatever little... Yeah. Part.
Like that scene in that Phil Collins video where he's describing the video to his manager and he says, that's great. And he's like, what, the idea? And he's like, no, great sandwich. You guys remember that?
I don't remember that.
I got to figure out what video that is, but it's not a verbatim quote, but it was that joke.
Uh-huh.
I think it's off the Face Value. What's the Susudio? Oh, No Jacket Required. Yeah. No Jacket Required album.
I'm curious, Jim, did you watch the Fred Schneider video?
Yeah.
Monster. So I'd heard that song, I remember, but the video had been banned. That video was so extreme.
Right.
It wasn't ever on
I've never seen it. What's so extreme about it?
Well, you know the song, right?
No.
The Fred Schneider song? Uh-uh. It's from his first solo record.
Never heard it.
There's a
Monster in My Pants.
it's
pretty much literal.
Oh.
Like the video is like, it's exactly what you think. It's just really funny.
But I think
it's
I have heard that song.
So ridiculous.
But the video is interesting to watch because Tina Weymouth is in it. She's one of the singers.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that, yeah.
Keith Haring's in it.
Wow.
Yeah. He's like drawing towards the end of the Fred Schneider video.
I must not have watched the whole thing. Yeah,
and I feel like maybe it's possible that Chris France and Tina Weymouth might have played on the record, I'm assuming.
Well, I saw that Mary Lambert went to Rhode Island School of Design.
Ah,
oh, so, okay. Okay, well, there was two Tom Tom Club songs on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And Gary Kerr first, who managed Talking Heads and B-52s,
right.
Produced the movie.
Yeah.
Kind of this circle of people, I think.
Uh-huh. And we've mentioned before, we've performed with Fred
That's right.
before. Did you play that show? Play that show?
I did.
Rick did.
Rick played.
Yeah. At Brixie's.
Yep. At Brixie's.
Brookfield, Illinois.
That's right. Yeah. Fred showed and played to, you know, 50 people at Brixie's who didn't understand why Fred was there. And then also the guy from True Blood was there.
It was a strange
on
night.
On a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Announcing the acts. Grace Jones, hot off of A View to a Kill. That was before this film. 1985, View to a Kill. And who else was kind of... There's another actor who was like in a weird spot in their career. But yeah, this film was completely forgotten. Siskel and Ebert reviewed it.
Really?
Two thumbs down.
No.
They thought it should have explored more of the Gabriel Byrne, Ellen Barkin story and had less of the side characters. But, you know, I don't know if they really understood the film because... They do mention a twist, and they say they're not going to spoil it, but not. And so they, I guess, they did know what happened. The post mortem sequence could have been a little more refined, I think, is their point.
The ending, you mean, or were
there's two timelines in the film.
Right.
There's one what happened before she died, and then everything that happened after she died, and they intersperse cut that, which I actually thought was edited really well, even when they were doing the tight cuts between, you know, her being murdered twice. Once pre-mortem and one post-mortem. I guess she was murdered by the taxi cab driver, but that's pretty brutal. Uh-huh. But yeah, they felt the post-mortem story was a little sloppy.
Interesting. Oh, there, I did it again. Interesting. See, I'm kind of self-conscious about that now. Here's my question. Music video directors. So you got your Mary Lambert. Didn't seem to be able to transition. But then you got your David Fincher, right, who also did Madonna videos.
Right.
You got your Spike Jones, skateboard video director.
Yep.
Then music video director, and then accomplished, acclaimed director. So what?
Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, she's later. I feel like she's later.
She is later, but she did music videos.
Yeah, but that kind of music video generation. Although Julian Temple, right? Julian Temple, he did music videos and then was kind of did movies. I'm trying to remember. And so I'm trying to figure out what went wrong. Mary Lambert. What went wrong?
Well, Mary Lambert did Pet Sematary, which was actually, I enjoyed that film. Did you, the original, I know maybe you saw the remake, but that
no,
I saw the original.
I haven't seen either.
It's a good film. It's a good creepy horror film. It's done, I don't know if I should say this. In some cases, you can tell the difference between a female director and a male director. And I think that a female director, that difference is interesting to me. Pet Sematary had that too. Like, it didn't feel like a classless horror film. It felt like there was a little extra juice in it. Maybe that's diminishing her talent by saying it's because of her gender, so I guess I'll retract my statement. But I do feel like people's lives experiences influence how they put out their art. In terms of a horror movie, I don't know, there's just a lot of dudes that would just put that out as a slasher, and I think there was more to Pet Sematary than just being a horror film. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a great movie, but it was better than most Stephen King adaptations.
And I'm trying to think from this era, like Penelope Spheeris was kind of the opposite in a weird way, right? She started out doing documentary, then started doing music videos, right? I feel like she did music videos after she did The Decline of Western Civilization, right? And then she started doing, I feel like she did some music videos, and then she started doing feature films.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then what was the film with the lighthouse in it, Jim, of the little girl or who or boy who was sick and
Paper House.
Paper House. Wasn't that a music video director
making
a
feature
film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you focus on the music video director movies. No, it's just two so far.
One in each season. There's always
right.
one.
Uh-huh.
So did you like the film, Rick? I think Jim was dancing around saying that he liked it. I said full out I liked it. I thought it was worth watching.
I mean, I thought it was interesting. A movie like this, I stop digesting it as a movie and I start thinking about how did this happen? Why? What's going wrong? Why are these things happening? Like all that stuff about the music video directors, right? It's like, oh, because there are moments where there are a few shots that are really good looking in that music video vein. And then, like I said, the little kind of interaction, little mini narratives, sometimes that works. Or there are moments like she walked, Ellen Barkin walked into a door and kind of walked through a door and kind of spun around. It's like, oh, she must be a dancer. And then later on, a guy says, oh, you're a dancer, right? Or something like that, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. There are all those kind of like little music video moments. And then I was trying to figure out the puzzle. It took me a while to figure out she was dead. And then I thought she was experiencing, you know, her life flashing before her eyes while she was jumping out of the plane. But it wasn't quite that.
It was a real Ballad of Cable Hogue situation.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to decode it. So I went into the mode. I wasn't engaged enough, I guess, in the film where I'm starting to analyze it. I'm starting to decode it. I'm starting to look at the acting and thinking about what everyone's thinking, what's going on, how much of it is improvised, how much of it is intentional, and how much is unintentional. I enjoyed watching it, but I didn't enjoy it as a film experience, I guess, like or I didn't get lost in the narrative. I just started tearing it apart. And it's the kind of thing I do with music, too. It's like certain music I can't listen to. I just sit there and I start kind of examining it. And I felt a little bit that way when I was watching this, where it was more like I was dissecting it.
Well, that's a condemnation of it, right? Like, if you can't get lost in it, like the in recording the things I listen to and stuff that we record and want to put out, is like, okay, will that distract? Is that so bad that will distract the listener to the point of where they're no longer in the song anymore? They're like, oh, I caught a mistake. Right? Because some mistakes in songs sound good.
Yeah.
Some mistakes in film are fine. Scorsese has tons of continuity errors. He doesn't give a shit. But like, you don't get taken out of the film, so you're okay with it. But
yeah,
I felt that there's a point in time in the film where I just started forgiving it. It was a $3 million budget film. It made $700,000. So a failure. That is what baffles me. There's so many films that have lost money. How do you make money as a studio? I guess you have one big film or something.
Yeah. Yep. The tape didn't break. The machine
didn't break.
That's right.
Are we supposed to agree that, I think it was an excellent VHS tape.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's what I wanted to talk about, too. So I didn't watch the Madonna videos, but I, you know, watching the Eurythmics video and the Sheila E. video, those are really good-looking videos, right? And the cinematography is really great. It wasn't so great in this film.
It wasn't. But if you take three
But it's also the VHS.
$3 million
to
do 90 minutes or 100 minutes, and then you take $60,000 to do 3 minutes. I don't know. I should probably do the math, but
oh,
I think
no. Yeah, yeah. So that's the thing.
Or $200,000 to do 3 minutes.
That's part of the problem too. Probably when these directors would make this jump, not that they wouldn't be aware of it, but it's like, oh yeah, like it's entirely possible. Things were getting crazy. You could spend $1 million on a 3 minute video, right?
Right.
And then trying to stretch that across a whole feature length film, and then trying to get, that was the thing that I felt was missing. There were some powerful visual moments, but it didn't feel as powerful as like a Madonna video, like some of the powerful visual moments in a Madonna video, right?
Like, say, Material Girl.
Yeah.
We should mention that we watched this film, we did already, in your childhood home. We had Lido's pizza. It was amazing, as always, delivered to the door. A little late today, I gotta say. I usually don't say negative
little
things
late.
About Lido's, but a little late. And watched it on VHS. I think we've done that before, watched a VHS tape before.
I don't think we have.
No? Is this our first VHS tape?
Yeah, which is amazing, I thought.
It seemed more reliable than some of the digital streaming we've attempted in the past.
Oh, the other, the Mary Lambert video, I'd never seen this. The Go-Go's video was...
I didn't watch that.
Turn to You.
Oh, wait. Yeah, okay. I
remember they're dressed as, they're like a boy band. They're dressed as boys. That's probably why I never, you know, maybe it was too controversial. It's not really controversial, but they're just.
Yeah, 40 years ago.
MTV
was crazy.
Yeah, you know? It wasn't shocking, but it's just, they're a boy band. It's like a 60s Jane Weiland. Looks like she's like in the Beatles. She's got like a Beatles haircut, like a bowl cut, almost like it's crazy. She's got this like bowl cut, but they're all, yeah, Belinda Carlisle is just looks like a boy. It's really crazy. And Rob Lowe is in the video.
Wow. Dressed as a boy or a girl?
He's a boy. And Belinda Carlisle's a girl in the video also. She's in the audience. It's like this fancy party, like 60s, almost like debutantes. It's this rich party, but there's the band playing and it's the Go-Go's and they're all like a boy band. Except for the drummer. The drummer is a girl. She's like a go-go, 60s go-go girl.
Do you think she refused?
That's what I don't know. It's not fair to like, I bet she didn't know. It's like, oh no, maybe it wasn't her choice. But yeah, that's the immediate thing. It's like, oh, what? Oh, I'm not going to be a boy. And, but or maybe it was, you know, Thea. Maybe it was Mary Lambert who says, okay, you're all going to be boys except for you. You're going to be a girl playing the drums. Okay.
Because Gina Shock had short hair. The other ones had short hair sometimes, though.
It was definitely one of the better videos. Like, some of her videos, they're just like the Eurythmics one is mostly live.
Yeah.
And, like, the Sheila E. video is all Sheila E. and them dancing. It's a great video, but, you know, I don't know how much she added. It's all their performing. The Go-Go's video looked great and was like a night, like a little film, and it was all shot in this fancy mansion. It all looked really great.
I'm running it right now as you're talking, and like they're dancing and they're playing, and then right when you said mansion, it switched to the outside mansion shot. I wish you could all see this.
But we'll all stream it as we listen to the podcast. She worked with Motley Crue, The Pretenders, Sting, Janet Jackson, The Eurythmics, Debbie Harry.
Night Ranger?
Wasn't there
a Night Ranger?
Night Ranger.
I didn't watch that video.
The Go-Go's and Lionel Richie.
I mean, we need to talk about another friend of the podcast, her work on Under the Cherry Moon. Directed the first 16 days of Under the Cherry Moon.
Did she really?
Yes.
Wow. That's where I've heard her name before.
Yeah, and then left the production.
Interesting. You know, actually, another person somewhat tied to the theme of the podcast. So this film came out in 1987. I graduated high school in 1988, and Greg Saran graduated high school in 1988 along with me, and he is now the lead guitarist for Lionel Richie.
Wow.
So there's a little tie there. She worked on Rick's mention of on another podcast. I started to watch a lot of Lionel Richie in the We Are the World, but We Are the World video and how they put that together.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was so involved.
Greg Saran, that would have been John Saran's brother. There was a John Saran in my year.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. I used to have a John Saran dollar. He had these Xerox dollars with his face.
He did he?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. He had his own money.
It was very funny.
She did Like a Prayer, La Isla Bonita, Material Girl, Like a Virgin, and Borderline. Borderline's a great video.
Which one is that?
Isn't she on a boat in Borderline? Is she in a boat in all of them, now that I think about it?
Like a Prayer is the one with the firing, like the burning crosses, right?
Yeah, the one that Pepsi pulled the commercial, Like a Prayer commercial, because of the actual Like a Prayer. I think Madonna makes out with Black Jesus in that
video. Yeah. That one I remember being visually arresting.
Yeah. I mean, she did good stuff.
Yep.
I think you hit on it, Rick, as you hand these people who are making videos probably for hundreds of thousands of dollars to do 3 minutes. They don't have to pay attention to audio because that's all going to be dubbed, with the exception of the interludes.
2 minute narrative at the beginning, and you're dealing with Dave Stewart delivering lines, you know, and it's like, okay, this is about as good as we're going to get out of Dave Stewart.
Right. We're going to forgive these.
Hey, Annie, just be yourself tonight. He did good. I thought he did good. I like Dave Stewart.
Most of the films I've made lately were music videos or compilations of music videos, and I just love the fact that you do not have to worry about audio. Yeah,
it is.
I mean, you have to play the music so people can move to the song, but just dub that over later. That's about all I have on this film.
I just read a little interview with her, with Mary Lambert, talking about the soundtrack with Miles Davis. And
oh, yeah.
It was like they were making the movie, or she was putting together like rough cuts. She was using Sketches of Spain, Miles Davis record from like 59, I think it is. And using that as, well, it takes place in Spain too. It's obvious, but she just liked that a lot. And then they were trying to find other music. And then it was like someone came up with, it was like, well, let's just, why don't we get Miles to do something? It was like, never even occurred. It was like this was a possibility. And so it just was like, oh, I can't remember who it is, the manager, you know, his manager or the people's managers. And it was like, oh yeah, I can call, you know, they just made a deal. And it was like, he came and watched, I guess, a rough cut. She was talking about, he just showed up at the studio or something and expected some kind of entourage, and it was just him blowing up in his, like, Ferrari, you know, just by himself, sat with her watching the movie and was completely cool. She was expecting, you know, working with musicians and Miles Davis, you know, it's like you assume he's going to be surly and just not aggressive, but just like moody and weird, you know, it's like Miles Davis, you know, intense. And it sounded like they just got along immediately and he was really into it and was like, oh yeah, I'll do this. And she sat in on the recording sessions too. So she just was like, as a fan, you know, she didn't.
Miles, could you play that again for me? Could you put a little more feeling in that? She didn't do that.
Yeah. Even though she talks about that, it was like how, well, it is tricky because it's supposed to be, you know, the movies are collaborative and musicians sometimes don't get it. And it's like, you know, especially very famous musicians. And it was like, from the start, it was like he was totally cool. And Marcus Miller, I know nothing about jazz stuff, but he's the guy who wrote a lot of the music for the record too and produced a few records with Miles Davis around that time, worked with him and worked with a bunch of other people. He's a big music producer guy and jazz musician, bass player and stuff, and arranger. He did a lot of the arranging and writing and stuff, and Miles would play over it. A lot of it was Miles, but it was Marcus Miller wrote a lot of the music, I guess.
And when you're talking about 80s Miles Davis, and then you say the word jazz, you have automatic quotes around it, right?
Right.
Miles earned his salt, man. This is not Pat Metheny.
They're like dismissed. Like that's one of the thing about reading about the record. The soundtrack actually came out before the movie and was well received.
It's a good name for a Miles Davis record, Siesta.
Yeah.
This clearly influenced Zelman King a lot. A lot of that softcore stuff that came out on Cinemax later all has that muted trumpet with like sparse percussion mixed in with flowing red fabric. Like, I think Siesta kind of inspired a lot of that Cinemax trash that came out later. Mm. By the way, Tales from the Tour Bus turned me on to Bette Davis. She's amazing. I had never heard any of her stuff until I watched that show and then listened to all of her records, and she's incredible. Funk musician. Huh. And was Miles Davis's wife for some period of time.
Speaking of husbands and wives, I had totally forgotten that Gabriel Byrne and Ellen Barkin were married.
They met on this film set, got married shortly after.
In 1988, and split amicably in 1993 after having two children, and they finally officially divorced in 1999. Grace Jones and Isabella Rossellini both were nominated for 1988 Razzies for this film, which I was watching that too. I don't think their performances were that bad. They didn't do much.
Yeah, Isabella Rossellini, just didn't seem like she was just kind of almost a ghost. I guess she had to, well, spoiler alert, stab someone. I won't say who.
People are supposed to watch the film before. I guess how would they watch this film now that I think about it?
I don't know how many people actually... I don't know how many people listen, and then how many people...
You just have to...
actually watch the film.
Find
beforehand.
A copy in Indiana.
Yeah.
I think you can stream this film now. You can pay to stream it on YouTube.
Mm.
Huh.
So I'm glad I'm giving that tip to the listeners now at the end of the podcast once we've revealed everything.
Maybe Jim can just rip the VHS and
I'll put it on YouTube
and see how long it stays up there.
Or just send me a line and I'll just send you a VHS copy, dub it.
And by the way, no one ever writes our email address, lostfoundrewound@gmail.com. Maybe they're putting the ands back in and they don't realize to take the ands out.
I'm sure that's it.
If I go to register for that email address, there'll be hundreds of emails.
Kansas City. Food-wise, once only known as a barbecue town. But thanks to the Taco the Town podcast, everything has changed. Kansas City has rightfully taken its place as a taco paradise smack dab in the middle of the USA. And all of these tacos belong to us. On the Taco the Town podcast, my name is W. David Keith, certified tacoholic, and I live a very taco-centric lifestyle. On the Taco the Town podcast, we're tasting every taco in the town. We shine a light on all of the taco-rific tacos Kansas City has to offer, unearthing great taco memories, checking the latest stories in taco news, and interviewing actors, reporters, chefs, politicians, and musicians about their love for tacos. If you love tacos like I do, you're gonna love Taco the Town. Available wherever you get your taco podcasts. A proud member of the Lotus Pod Podcasting Network.
Jim, should this film be lost? Or should it go back to being lost? Is probably the better question. It is lost.
Say no. It's a document of its time. It's for the cast, just to see everybody, all those people in one movie, to see how sometimes it just doesn't work, you know? And it kind of, you can probably just go in and out.
You couldn't go in and out, though. It'd be hard to track.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's just, it kind of goes on. It drifts along a bit, and it's, I don't know.
It's a long 90 minutes.
Yeah, the plot, I don't know. This is much, you don't have to pay attention too much to the plot. I enjoyed it, though.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it. Rick, should this film be found, would you recommend this to a coworker or a student of yours?
Students. Again, you ask that question and then it just seems creepy. Hey, you know what's a really good film? Siesta. And I'll tell you what, Ellen Barkin's completely naked at the beginning.
Completely naked. I mean, like, yeah. She did not have underwear on.
But it's very artfully done.
It's a European film.
It's very European, if you know what I mean. So I think the film is lost. I think we found it. It's fascinating, but I think this goes way down the rabbit hole where it's kind of like, yeah, I'm trying to think of who I would recommend this movie to. I might describe it to someone and say, I saw this crazy film. With and then list everybody who's in it, and it didn't work.
I'll definitely mention it in a conversation as if people should have seen it, and I'm better than them because I have seen it. It's like the film Siesta. Have you ever seen Siesta? It's this incredible film. Jodie Foster, Grace Jones, Gabriel Byrne,
Isabella Rossellini, Martin Sheen makes an appearance
for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, burns down the house for 2 or 3 minutes at the beginning.
And Miles Davis does the music. Did I mention that?
I don't think I'll watch this movie. Although I did rewind it when we were finished watching it. But I don't think I would press play again. Will you watch this again, Jim? You own it. You own a mint condition VHS copy of this film.
I probably will.
Just to try to figure out what's going on. Totally get the timeline tracked out.
Yeah.
It's like What's Up, Doc? Like tracking the bags and What's Up, Doc.
Right. There's little things like you mentioned, the ring. Yeah, she takes
Oh, yeah, she moves her ring.
And her hair, she cuts her hair. And that's pretty simple. It's like, oh, yeah.
There's merit in going back and watching all the videos prior to this film and then the videos after this film and see if you can track if this film, you know, helped her hone her craft or if she was just repeating old tricks or...
Well, I saw a little note is that some Madonna video is shot in the same town. So there's a Madonna video that's shot in the same location.
La Isla Bonita, I'd imagine.
Maybe, yeah. So it definitely had an effect. And then, yeah, apparently Madonna was... Mary Lambert wanted Madonna to be in the movie.
Correct, yeah.
But it was too racy for Madonna.
Yeah, that's what Madonna said. It was too racy.
Which sounds like maybe a Madonna excuse because, yeah, she totally had that book.
Well, she did an NC-17 film.
Yeah, so that was just Madonna... making an excuse.
Where with, what's his name? The guy from Antichrist and Spider-Man and The Lighthouse.
Willem Dafoe?
Willem Dafoe is, yeah, in the Madonna NC-17 movie that came out in parallel with her book. Although Madonna famously has condemned that film. It's a great quote from her when they sort of say, like, why did you do this film? You know, it's terrible. Basically, they blamed the quality of the film. And she's like, I didn't write it. I didn't direct it. I didn't shoot it. I didn't edit it. I don't know why I'm being blamed for the quality of the film.
Oh, yeah. The big star. It gets hung on the star, biggest star.
Yeah.
Or on the, no, it can be hung on the director, I guess. But not if it's Madonna. The thing that I realize now is that I'm going to have to watch Under the Cherry Moon. I still have not watched Under the Cherry Moon. And what I found out is that Michael Ballhaus was the cinematographer on that.
Is it the same cinematographer for this film?
No. Oh. The cinematographer who did like worked with Scorsese like after like he started with Scorsese on After Hours, did a lot of Scorsese films. Is Michael Ballhaus German? I think he is, yeah. He was, what's his name? Fassbinder's cinematographer, I think.
I think Under the Cherry Moon had some amazing credits to it, if I remember correctly. And I think when the dailies were coming back, they thought they had something good. And that Prince thought he was making a live-action Looney Tunes movie where he was Bugs Bunny. And I've never watched it. I've only seen it once, and it was very hard to watch. which was baffling to me because I love Prince. I'm just like, how could a Prince movie be bad? I mean, it's just at least Prince is in it. I think I had to stop watching Graffiti Bridge. 20 minutes in, I was like, this is unwatchable.
Prince, I'm sorry. Sorry, Prince.
Yeah.
You can't do this.
I should apologize to Prince, the memory of Prince. Yeah, it's bad. But I haven't watched it with that. But because once somebody mentioned that it was kind of his take on a Looney Tunes movie, I think How Did This Get Made kind of cracked that. And I was like, oh, I should go back and watch it and see if that's what he thought he was doing, like Three Stooges.
Yeah.
Or Looney Tunes or something. It just fell flat. Oh, well. It happens.
Did Madonna ever direct a movie? Did she ever get to that point? I'm asking you, Chris, because you would know. Why, I don't know why I'm asking.
I feel like that's an insult.
Jim, do you know? Did Madonna ever actually direct a film?
Jim doesn't even know who Madonna is.
Madonna, who? Jesus' mother?
Her husband directed several films.
Yes.
Ex-husband.
Guy Ritchie.
Right.
Checking.
Like a robot.
Yeah,
checking.
Totally.
Checking.
Like a robot. That's the new Madonna song. Got
like a prayer, like a virgin, like a robot.
Like a robot. That was the one thing, Jim, when you were
all vocoder.
When you were out of the room, Chris and I were talking about AI generated movies, and in a way this almost feels like future.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like you just name a bunch of actors.
So he gave me like a 9.5 sex scene in the midst of like, I want a Ferrari in it, like in Magnum P.I. Right. Put it in Spain.
Spain. Yeah, have Miles Davis do the music. Like Miles Davis sounding music. And yeah, it just sounds like an AI prompt. You know, you just list all the actors and then you get this 90-minute interesting story with a twist.
Before we watched it, I should tell the audience that we went through the TV, the modern television, to turn off all the weird filters because we turned on the VHS and we all immediately sensed something wrong. You know, this doesn't look like a movie.
This doesn't look like a crappy VHS tape.
It was totally, yeah.
Had to turn off all the filters.
Soap opera mode, right? It was the sharpening and the, it had tweaked it to make it look like an actual, digital video. It was, terrible looking.
So now you should turn all that stuff back on. That's why I'll watch it again with all the smooth out stuff. Then it'll really look like an AI movie.
Exactly.
It'll be weird and
totally generated.
Stranger.
Jim and I came, you know, as close as we've ever come to having an argument while watching the film, where there was a scene where they showed a bullfighting ring. And I said, oh, yeah, this is Spain. She should have been driving a Lamborghini as opposed to a Ferrari. And Jim's like, they're both Italian cars. I said, yes, but the Lamborghinis are named after the bulls.
Which I knew.
The famous bulls.
As well.
Which you knew. I know you knew that. But well, let me ask you this. Who was the greatest bullfighter of all time? He would get on his knees with his back to the bull. That was his most dominant move.
Joey Toro? Toro?
No.
Joey Toro.
No.
Joey Toro, greatest bullfighter.
Manolete. And do we know the bull, a.k.a. the Lamborghini, that toppled Manolete?
Is one of them like Diablo? That's an early...
There is a Diablo.
Lamborghini, I think.
It's not... I'll give you a hint. It's not Cantouche.
I've forgotten. What are they called? I don't remember any of the Lamborghini names.
Islero. It's an early one. Yeah, because he was the great, you know, he toppled the greatest bullfighter of all time.
Wow.
He killed.
He took him out.
Islero killed Manolete, and my wife refuses to let me use the words Manolete or Islero in my house because I have a bulldog. And I fight him like a bull in a bull ring. And the greatest moment is I turn my back to him. I get on my knees. And he just runs up and bites me in the ass.
You've got just scars all over your back.
Right, all over my back. I am not. I guess I am as good as Monolite because that's how he got it, too.
So Madonna has directed two films. Filth and Wisdom, 2008. A comedy centered on three flatmates living desperate lives in London. And then 2011's W.E., the affair between King Edward the VIII and American divorcee Wallace Simpson, and a contemporary romance between a married woman and a Russian security guard. That's the story of W.E. So yeah, Madonna's directed two films.
Good job, Madonna. And on that, we'll conclude this episode of Lost and Found. Everyone, thanks for listening to Season 2, Episode 2.
Good job, Mr. Professional DJ.
Lost and Found and Rewound is fully funded by Lost and Found and Rewound Foundation Funds. Lost and Found and Rewound does not use crowdfunding because our listeners have better things to do with their funding. There's no need to post reviews of Lost and Found and Rewound because our listeners have more valuable things to do with their time. In all sincerity, thank you for listening to the show. We truly appreciate it.
Lotus Pod.